So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the fifth webinar in the framework of the capacity building program that was set up to prepare the ALSs for the upcoming Atlas II summit. Today we have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc and Nigel Hickson will speak about the future of internet governance, the second part. And I would like to emphasize on the fact that every participant in those webinars has to fill in the evaluation sheet that has been sent to you every time you receive an invitation. You have an attachment with this evaluation sheet, so please fill them in, because they help us to understand if you are happy with this capacity building program. Is there something to correct? We are ready to react if you express it. Thank you very much. So now I will give the floor to Thierry to give you some the normal consigne that she always gives before each webinar. So Thierry, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Tijani. Welcome to the pre-Atlas II webinar on the topic of Future of Internet Governance Part 2 on Monday, the 12th of May, 2014 at 2100 UTC. We will not be doing a roll call as it is a webinar, but if I could please remind everyone on the phone bridge as well as the speakers, as well as the computer, to mute your speakers and microphone, as well as state your name when speaking, not only for transcription purposes, but to allow the interpreters to identify you on the other language channels. We have Spanish and French interpretation today. Thank you, everyone, for joining today's webinar, and I'll turn it back over to you, Tijani.
Thank you very much, Thierry. So now to you, Olivier and Nigel.
Thank you very much, Tijani. It's Olivier speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes, very good.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'll ask staff to go into the Brazil document, the one which is called Net Mundial Multi-Stakeholder Document. What I'll be doing is to just take you through the document as to the final document that was created over at Net Mundial. There was an initial document which was shown and distributed among all the participants, and everyone started working from the first document and moved on to this final document which you have on the screen. In fact, both documents are linked to the agenda of this call. So if you click on the agenda itself, you'll find out, and you can download the documents at your leisure and read through them. I was just going to go through this quickly and then hand the floor over to Nigel, who's got a presentation about what this really meant, what Net Mundial actually meant, and where we have to go from here, basically. So the document itself, as you will notice, is marked 24th of April, the last day, the second day of the meeting, at 19:31 Brazilian time. In fact, there was a good number of hours that passed by, nerve-wracking hours, thinking, well, what's going to come out from all of the discussions that we've had during the past 2 days. The preamble is just an explanation of what has happened, and what's important is that the document is in two pieces. It's got the first part, which is the Internet governance principles, and the second part is the roadmap for the future evolution of the Internet governance ecosystem. And you will find that as far as the Internet governance principles, there has been a lot of work done. It's the first time it's actually set down as a subset, if you want, of all of the different pieces of work that have been done prior to this meeting, with some groups having Internet freedom rights, internet rights and principles. There's been an enormous number of different pieces of work. The European, the Council of Europe did some work on this. Several other civil society groups did some work on putting together some governance principles, but there was never any document that was actually agreed on by a multi-stakeholder in a multi-stakeholder method and by all stakeholders that were present. You have to remember, Net Mondial had governments, civil society, the private sector, and the technical community all in one room, and that really is a first. And there was a lot of interaction and a lot of input from all of these different stakeholders. So first, the principles. Well, I guess the first of the principles, which everyone has agreed on, and it was pretty straightforward, and in fact, quite surprisingly so, bearing in mind a couple of years earlier at the World Conference on the International Telecommunications, the WCIT, that took place in Dubai, there had been such a problem with regards to having human rights included in a treaty that was dealing with telecommunications. In here, the human rights and shared values were all brought in, and in fact were spelled out specifically, but are not limited to the ones which were spelled out. But these are the basic ones which everyone agreed on. First, the freedom of expression. That's, of course, to do with those countries that block the Internet. Freedom of association, again, is a basic human right as well. The right to privacy, and that, I guess, has to do with agencies that listen to the Internet and that collect surveillance. Accessibility, and that deals with people with disabilities. The freedom of information to access to information. One has to remember, sometimes this document might seem a little bit disjointed, but it was done really in the heat of the moment, very, very as fast as possible. So sometimes there are a little bit, a few repeats around, but most of the time they're all well-structured. Then, of course, there's the development of the Internet, and this is the way that the Internet has been developed so far is through the IETF, and it also brings, makes sure that the Internet is developing worldwide and is not just in one country. Protection of intermediaries was interesting. That deals, somebody is playing with my arrow at the moment. I don't know who's playing with it. Trying to fight it. Okay, here we go. That's where the arrow is. It's interesting. This is for any telecommunications supplier or any internet service provider. That effectively protects them from being sued in case there is content on a website or on a network and so on. It protects them from actually being sued, and it was something that was quite important for Internet service providers. Culture and linguistic diversity, well, that's pretty straightforward. Unified and unfragmented space, that really is to do with the Internet being one Internet rather than being cut into smaller bits, especially when one sees the danger and behavior. Significant danger of the Internet breaking off into several parts, all behind firewalls, etc. Security, stability, and resilience, very important if you want an Internet that is stable and reliable. Then open and distributed architecture, that again is something which the IETF on the one hand and the World Wide Web Consortium, the W3C, on the other hand, have been practicing very much. And it needs to remain like this. And then enabling the environment for sustainable innovation and creativity. That really is a case of making sure the Internet continues to remain open so as to foster innovation and doesn't end up being blocked up in one way or other by the established players today. Then you've got Internet governance process principles, and that is to do with the actual governing of the Internet, not the way that the Internet works. And here, there is a very significant part here, the multi-stakeholder aspect of it. As you might or might not know, some countries are advocating a multilateral model, which effectively means that only governments would be able to decide on the future of the internet and make decisions. And that's obviously something which was rejected here. It really pushes for the multi-stakeholder model to be the core of internet governance in the future and today, of course. Open participative consensus-driven governance, again, use consensus, transparent, accountable, inclusive and equitable, distributed, and decentralized, also quite important, a point which was made here, collaborative, and enabling a meaningful participation. All of these really are parts of the way the internet is run today. And here you have on this document an actual commitment from those that were present that this is the way the internet should continue to be governed in the future. And then, of course, the universal access and the promotion of high-quality internet access worldwide is particularly important in there. And it mentions in there that the policies should be future-oriented and technology-neutral. So you would not end up with a vendor controlling or having the ability to control the way the internet will grow in the future. Then you've got open standards. That's a bit of a repeat of what was said earlier, but it's a paragraph which basically spells out the resiliency, the internet that's global, interoperable, decentralized, secure, etc. So these are the first part. Now the second part was a bit more tricky. It's the roadmap for the future evolution of the internet governance. Here the document basically points at several things. First, it mentions the Tunis Agenda, and it mentions the implementation of the Tunis Agenda, having demonstrated the value of the multi-stakeholder model in internet governance, and basically asking for this model to be strengthened and to evolve and to be improved, to continue in the direction that it's been going so far. Then, of course, it speaks about several issues. I'm not going to go through all of the issues that are there, but it certainly repeats again the fact that it requires multi-stakeholder governance, internet governance processes, and the selection of those people involved in the multi-stakeholder process to be open, democratic, and transparent. Really, some words which are being used and repeated a number of times, and I think you'll notice multi-stakeholder is in so many of the different paragraphs is particularly important. And it's important because in the future you might think, well, some might just pick one or the other of the paragraphs and say, well, we agree with this, but we don't agree with that. And here you've got really something that is across everything. Now, someone's played with a chat, and I can't see the document. Okay, here we go. Okay, so we've got this first part, and then the issues dealing with institutional improvements, again, quite important. There is a paragraph, a significant paragraph, about the IGF, the Internet Governance Forum, which has been going on for a while but has never really been taken seriously by some governments. And here it is the first time that there is an actual real significant step forward towards making the IGF very important for all stakeholders. And it mentions here a number of improvements which are suggested with regards to the IGF. And one of them, of course, is the funding of the IGF to strengthen the IGF itself, to extend its mandate beyond those five-year terms, questioning whether the IGF will go on next year and the year afterwards is something which has not contributed to the stability of the process itself. And then finally, there's further down, there's paragraph about the IANA functions, and it mentions a welcome the recent announcement of the U.S. government with regards to the transition of stewardship of IANA functions. There's a small paragraph on there. There was a concern initially that the majority of the discussion at Net Mondial was going to be about this, and due to some good scheduling of the meeting, it only took a small part of it towards the end. So you can see here there is the IANA function on one side, and then there's the globalization of ICANN as well, which asks for ICANN to become a truly international and global organization serving the public interest. And then issues dealing with specific internet governance topics. Now, that there were a few issues which were added as a part three. The security and stability is something that was important, and there are several sub-paragraphs about this in the document. And then there is a paragraph which civil society really pushed for and which has made it in the final document, and that's to do with mass and arbitrary surveillance, mentioning that it undermines the trust in the Internet and trust in the Internet governance ecosystem itself. And then there is a small paragraph about capacity building and financing, important for all stakeholders to be able to have a participation at the table, and that's something which I think we all resonate with, being able to meet face-to-face and also perform a lot of capacity building at the edges so as to bring more people in the Internet governance space. Some points could not be agreed on by all stakeholders present, and therefore they were put into a paragraph called Points to be Further Discussed Beyond Net Mondial. And that's it's interesting because some of these are issues which have been around for a long time and which for different stakeholders are very important, which effectively means that that it's impossible to get consensus, or at least not in a two-day meeting such as this one. The first one, the different roles and responsibilities of stakeholders in Internet governance, the application of this equal footing, in other words, that every type of stakeholder, civil society, private sector, governments, technical community, will all be on the same level, is something that some stakeholders did not particularly agree with, feeling that, for example, governments would due to the issue of sovereignty, would have more of a say than other stakeholders. Jurisdiction issues are particularly complex. What jurisdiction would Internet governance run under if you're looking at a global network with thousands, well, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of different jurisdictions, national jurisdictions? Benchmarking systems and the creation of indicators to sort of metrics, effectively, regarding the application of Internet governance principles. Again, that's a big amount of work that will probably need to be done in the next few years. And finally, net neutrality, network neutrality is such a vast set of words for so many different things. There were interesting and productive discussions that took place there, but some stakeholders, clearly the telecommunication companies, did not wish to have this principle of network neutrality included, at least without it being clearly explained as to what network neutrality means as such. Because to some it means that all traffic should be treated the same way, but to others it means something else. And of course you've got network neutrality as far as the telecommunication traffic is concerned, but you could also say that search engine neutrality is another thing you would want to ask. And you could also you have various different levels of network neutrality. So that's something for future work. And then finally, the way forward. Well, that basically tells everyone that there are a number of other processes currently taking place. Of course, the IGF coming up, the Internet Governance Forum in Turkey, the World Summit on Information Systems, the WSIS, plus 10. So that's 10 years after the launch of the WSIS. And a number of other follow-up discussions and so on. So that's the current state of the document. And in order to take you then further, what does it all mean? I guess I can hand the floor over to Nigel Hitson. The only thing I would say before handing the floor over is to recommend to you reading an article that was published in Circle ID by Wolfgang Kleinwächter. Although Professor Kleinwächter was not able to come to Sao Paulo, he followed this very closely by remote participation. One particularly important thing, that the remote participation was very well done. And he gave, in this article, he writes a very interesting set of historical data and the background to it, and what really led to this Net Mundial. He is rather pleased with it, and I must say, I think the majority of people who were there were rather pleased. The few countries did not like what was going on, I guess that's their prerogative. They can do that, but altogether. It was a very good meeting, having been there. So thank you. And over to you, Nigel.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Very well indeed. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Well, good evening, everyone. And thank you very much indeed for giving us the opportunity to talk to you again. And thank you, Olivier, for outlining what happened at São Paulo. I think those of us that were there were privileged to be there. It was, as many have said, a quite a sort of unique experience. All I wanted to do was run through a very few brief impressions of it. I don't know if you've got the slides at all. I just penned three or four slides on this, but. Really, it was just some impressions of Net Mondial and the impact that it might have. I think they're coming up. I mean, as Olivier said, it was quite unique in the sense that it was an experiment in the multi-stakeholder approach. The whole issue was, if you like, conceived by Brazil, but the whole organisation of it, the way it was carried out, etc., was done in a multi-stakeholder way, and those. Perhaps if we could go to the next slide, or can I do it? Not sure. Let me see. Oh yes, right. So I'll run through these very, very quickly. As I said, a unique multi-stakeholder process, I think, in many ways. First of all, the organization of it, although it was led by Brazil, there was an executive committee and a high-level committee. The executive committee and the high-level committee was made up of governed civil society from government and the technical community, and people were appointed to those roles. And at all the proposed inputs, there were 188 papers that were put in, as many of you will have known, And those actually, those papers themselves were fairly evenly split between the different constituencies. Not exactly, but a fairly good even split. The conference itself was conducted in a festival called Away. I've said, apart from the statements, the first more rather taken up first lunch on the...
Nigel, we've lost you. It's Olivier speaking, and I see a lot of notes on the chat that we do have problems with your audio at the moment. Heidi, is Adigo working on this, or is Nigel perhaps on a mobile phone and in an area with no reception?
No, Olivier, Nigel was speaking on the Adobe.
Ah.
Yes, I said that Nigel was using the Adobe. Okay, so please call him, please.
And apologies for this. It's technical problems that one usually has when you're scattered around the world. Maybe I can pick it up from here. Well, these are personal impressions from Nigel, so it would be difficult for me to mention his personal impressions. But my personal impressions, if I can just fill the gap for the time being, so Olivia speaking, my personal impressions, I think at the beginning I was a little bit suspicious, maybe not suspicious, but surprised at the way this was going to run. There were four microphones on the floor. Yes, Nigel, you're back?
I'm so sorry, yes, my Skype dropped out. I do apologize.
I was just saying there were four microphones on the floor, one for governments, one for civil society, one for the technical community, and one for the private sector, and that was certainly a format that brought a lot more input than had there just been one line, especially since governments usually don't stand in line, but strangely enough, the government line was the longest one of the lot, of the four, so... Anyway, back to you, Nigel. You were sharing personal impressions, and I'm sorry, I'm just filling in for you.
No, I'm very, very grateful. I do apologize. I'll be quick because I don't know why it dropped off. I'm in a hotel, and the hotel Wi-Fi is not so good. Yeah, so as Olivier said, actually, I mean, I was going to come on to that. The plenary session, the microphone line was quite a... you know, we were all a bit worried about it beforehand, whether it would not stand. They certainly did, and the vote too really, I think that says something for the future for all of us. Remote participation, as I think Olivier said as well, was excellent. There were, I think, about 12 different hubs, and it was just incredible, you know, during the discussion in the plenary, all of a sudden, from the floor in São Paulo, we'd go to a sort of computer room in San Francisco or in Beijing or wherever it was, and there would be 10 individuals clustered around a PC looking at what was going on and speaking to us, and that was quite amazing, and some of you were going to try, ICANN is going to try and recreate that during the Thursday of the ICANN London meeting. There's going to be some form of remote participation, hopefully. So I think, as I said, a true mixing of all the different players, everyone taking part. So I think, and a widespread endorsement, as Olivier said, of the final document. There was two or three governments, India and Cuba and Russia, that expressed some concern, to say the least, but there was
Saudi.
This endorsement.
And Saudi Arabia as well.
And Saudi Arabia as well, yeah, sorry. So all I wanted to do was give you just one word of impact. Now, of course, this is rather, you know, what the impact. It's only been a few weeks. But it's very interesting because those of us that are in, you know, discussions were what the impact of Sampala would be. And I think it's somewhat mixed. And I put down there we need to be realistic, but also a lot of shame. And I think points it out. In the 3 days after we started to the UN meeting in Geneva,
and we've lost.
So we had an agenda item at this meeting in the CSC. The agenda item was from the Am I online?
Yes, Nigel, it's Olivia speaking.
No,
it's still online, but it would be better if someone could dial out to you or something, because I think the network isn't doing too well at the moment.
Nigel, this is Terry from staff. I have private chatted you on the Adobe. If you provide us your phone number, we'd be happy to dial out to you to see if we can get a better connection.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Can you hear me? Yes. I can. I'll type it into the system if I can.
In the private chat area.
Yeah. Okay.
But well, just if you can hear me at the moment. All I was saying was that the impact is going to be varied, and at this UN meeting, people describe Net Mondial as just another private conference on internet governance and no more significant than many other conferences. So, you know, we are going to have to work at it, and we have to be realistic. But although it was a true multi-stakeholder event, for some governments, it doesn't have that much significance.
And Nigel, it's Olivier. I could add also, just to make sure we are aware, this is not a treaty, this is just a document, and so it's non-binding. And in other words, it was never signed by anyone. It just is a consensus document from the participants that were there. But it doesn't actually mean that any of this should be implemented as a matter of obligation as such.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, in the long run, let's be optimistic. In the long run, I think it is going to be seen as important. I'm hoping that those participants that turn up at the very important plenipotentiary conference in October, November in South Korea will at least be able to acknowledge that this was a multi-stakeholder environment discussing internet governance, which did produce something, and therefore that you know, this system we have does produce something, not necessarily something that everyone likes, but it does produce consensus consensus policy statements. Okay, well, that's all I have to say on that, and I'm sorry for the audio.
Tijani, back to you. Tijani. Okay, so it's...
Okay, thank you, Nigel. Thank you, Olivier.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Nigel, and thank you, Olivier, for this presentation. I hope everyone could understand more or less what happened in Sao Paulo and what was this Net Mondial. I open the floor for any question, if there is questions for Nigel or Olivier. Yes, I see that Antonio Marina Medina. Antonio, please. Antonio?
Good afternoon. This is Antonio Medina
Spanish.
For the record. I have an important concern in relation to the participation of government and the telecommunication and technology companies in general. We have not seen a document, in fact, summarizing the different points of view. I think it would be positive to see or to know your perception about these two groups, participation groups in Netmundia, governments on one hand and the technology sector on the other hand, to see and the way to follow or the path to follow in the future in terms of the multi-stakeholder model.
Thank you. Olivier or Nigel? So, Olivier.
Yes, thank you very much, Tijan. It's Olivier speaking. I was waiting for Nigel to speak on this, but that's fine. Yes, certainly, it would be interesting to see, the different point of views based around this. I'm personally, looking at the end document, I'm pretty pleased with it, bearing in mind the fact that before the conference, if you read the different inputs which were brought into the conference, I think the team, the Net Mundial team, has done an incredible amount of work in order to be able to bring forth the consensus between the different parties. And I'm particularly surprised with how few things were put into the to-be-decided-later section. Because there certainly are some points which are listed in the document today and which some countries definitely don't agree with, and yet they have understood the meaning of consensus and have felt that they could live with it. Now, then again, it might be the case that this document paints a very beautiful picture of the future because it is non-binding. If it was a binding document, we might have seen a lot more dissent, and we might have probably seen some more entrenched positions against some specific bits of the document, which would have then made it a lot more difficult to manage. But as it's non-binding, I think everyone felt this was something they could live with as such. Analyzing what the other points of view are and why they had those other points of view is something which I think... I guess if the Net Mundial team feels they have the stomach to do that, then they might proceed forward with it. But I think many people just see, let's look at the positive side and let's not focus on what the differences are. And there'll be plenty of other opportunities to find where the differences are in the future.
Thank you, Olivier. Any other questions?
Tijani, it's Olivier. I was going to ask if Nigel had any point of view on that, whether he also felt the same thing. And this is purely my point of view, by the way. I'm just saying this.
Hello, yes.
Nigel, please.
Hello, yes. Nigel here. I'm sorry. I was just connecting on the phone when that question came in, so I didn't. I didn't get the question. I do apologize.
The question is about the different point of view. Antonio was asking if there is a document that summarizes all the different point of view expressed during the Net Mundial. And Olivier asked, okay, go ahead.
Yes, well, I'm so sorry. Yes, so I mean, very very briefly, I mean, what happened during the conference, of course, is as Olivier explained, is that the input document, if you like, was turned into an output document through a number of drafting sessions, and all the comments that were made just before the conference, so the comments that were made on the document in the 10 days or so before the conference started, so all the written comments, and all the audio comments, so the comments that were made during the first plenary sessions, were all noted down. So the drafting teams, when they redrafted the documents, had all those comments. Now, I mean, how many were taken into account, of course, it's quite difficult, but a written record does exist of all the comments that were made, both in writing and on the floor of the conference itself. So that there is a historical record of, if you like, what took place and how one ended up with the output document. And as Olivier said, of course, there were compromises. And at one stage on the Wednesday night, we thought we were in trouble because there were lots of differences and on certain sections. And it really only was because of the flexibility that people showed and the ability to put some controversial issues like net neutrality, of course, into that last section of the document. Thank you.
Thank you, Major. Carlos Saul. Carlos, please.
Yes, very much. Either to Olivier or to Nigel, I think it's valid to ask, there is going to be another meeting under this methodology. I think it's very funny that we had this experiment, as you said, but now the ball is going back to the IGF or to the plenipotentiary, where we know there is no multi-stakeholder influence. I mean, I think it was excellent. I like it also very much. But IGF, as we know it today, still has no power to make anything binding. And the plenipotentiary, if you are not a minister or part of a big governmental delegation, there is no chance your voice will be heard. So I would like to hear from both of you. When do you think this methodology will be working for everybody forever? Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Yes, Nigel, please.
Well, I mean, very briefly, Nigel? Because I know we haven't got much time. Marvelous question, and it really is a great point because. Yes, so I mean, as I said before, you know, we went from Net Mondial. The following week, we were in a UN meeting, which was multi-stakeholder to an extent, but where governments were the only ones that did any voting, and of course, at the plenipotentiary in the ITU plenipotentiary, it'll only be the governments that really have any say how things go forward. So. Yes, I mean, it was a multi-stakeholder experiment. I think it worked, and I think it will perhaps persuade other people that that is the way to go to discuss these internet governance policy issues. We'll have it at the IGF, of course. We'll have discussions at the IGF. Hopefully at the IGF we might have some output papers coming out of the IGF, so that might well take us forward. And who knows? I mean, perhaps this time next year we'll be preparing for another Net Mondial somewhere else. But we don't know that, and nothing is planned as far as I know at the moment.
Thank you, Nigel. May I add something? I think that there was, first of all, there was a lot of calls for another Net Mondial. But for me, I don't think it is a wise decision to make another Net Mondial, because what is the Net Mondial finally? It was a meeting initiated by a government and by some organizations, some technical organizations in charge of the internet, and it was a meeting to make things move because of some things that happened some months before. So now, after Net Mondial, if we start to think to make other Net Mondial, that means that we'll kill the IGF, and it will be a pity. The IGF is very good. You said IGF has no power, but Net Mondial has no power too. So we need to make IGF with outputs, with compulsory, if you want, or recommendations that has to be taken into account by the decision makers. But we need to improve IGF, and we need to make it a standing event, not for 5 years only. Trying to make another Net Mondial, perhaps if there is a new thing that will happen, major thing that will happen, perhaps we can make another Net Mondial. But in normal condition, I think that we have to go to the IGF and to make it better, to make it with outputs, etc. You spoke about plenipotential ITU conference. I don't think that it is about internet. It is about telecommunication in general, and it doesn't replace any of these meetings. Thank you. Any other question? If there is not, I want to... Yes. Yes, please.
Thank you, Tijani. It's Olivier speaking. So I wanted to answer the question from Johnny Loriano in the chat. Johnny Loriano asks, in Net Mondial was considered as actors for governance, government, civil society, academic community, technical community, and private enterprise and internet users. What is the form of organization and participation of the technical community and academic users as new players recognized in Sao Paulo? Now, the technical community was primarily those people, whether they are companies or individuals or organizations, that take part in the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF. There were also some telecommunication companies that were present and that were a part of the technical community. The academic users, there were some people who came from universities and colleges, around the world, and some organizations that study internet governance, so they were also present. But I must say, with regards to being in the civil society or a technical community or academic users, many people were wearing more than one hat, and you did have some people who were there perhaps in the civil society, but also representing an organization that was a university, and they were involved in IETF, so that kind of put them under a number of different, wearing different hats, basically. What's important is that there were lines for everyone. I personally did not know what line to go into if I was to go as the chair of the at-large advisory committee. Would I be in the technical community, in civil society, in private enterprise? We are a very diverse group. So when I registered as other. And when it was time to choose the line to go in queue into, I basically just chose the shortest one. And the shortest one was the technical and academic community. And then Carlos asks, who manages and chooses the IGF secretariat? The IGF secretariat itself is just a function, but the actual work done in choosing workshops, etc., for the Internet Governance Forum is done by the multi-stakeholder advisory group, the MAG, which is made up of, I think over 50 people from real multi-stakeholder system, 50 people from around the world that meet a number of times and also have conference calls, I think, to prepare the IGF. The secretariat itself is just run on a shoestring budget. You can count the number of people working in the secretariat on your hands, which I personally think is terrible. They should be given a proper secretariat, but that's just my personal thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Any other question? By the way, I would like to remind you that the stakeholder, the multi-stakeholder model was implemented for the first time in the World Summit on Information Society, WSIS, and it was in 2003-2005. And the stakeholders were four stakeholders only, which was the government, the private sector, the civil society, and the international organizations. The civil society was a very broad family, very broad constituency, and academia, technical community, parliamentary, if you want, participants who are not private sector and who are not governments are considered as a civil society. Now we are witnessing some new division. So from the civil society we took the academia and the technical community. This is the new, if you want, distribution. But I think that both and technical community have the same concerns and the same position as the civil society in general. Thank you. Any other questions?
Tijani, Cheryl here.
Yes, Cheryl, please.
Thank you. Just following up from Cheryl for the record, Langdonor, following up from the point that Olivier was making, and that is the most desirable and need for support of the IGF Secretariat, I just wanted to bring to the Atlas member and community's awareness that one of the side benefits of Net Mundial was a gathering, an opportunistic gathering of CCTLD operators, which has resulted in Australia.au, Canada.ca, Denmark.dk, China.cn, Netherlands.nl, UnitedKingdom.uk, Brazil.br, and Mexico.nx, committing funds to the tune of an additional $100,000 US over the next several years, that's per year, over the next several years to better ensure that the Global IGF does continue to be a successful venue to discuss and resolve issues with the internet and internet governance. So I think it's important to note that sometimes things that happen off the agenda are almost as important as things that happen on. Thank you.
Tijani, we can't hear you. You must be muted.
Have we lost Tijani? Pick it up, Olivier.
I think I should pick it up. It looks as though we've lost Tijani. so sorry about this. I note there are still 4 minutes left until the end of this call, and we have not gone into the second part of this call, which is the IANA function. What is it, and what is the U.S. government doing? And for this, I wonder if I could ask Heidi, are we going to be able to have a small extension for the interpreter?
Heidi, I believe yes, but Gisela or Terry can confirm that, how long we have.
Yes, we do have interpreters a while longer.
Okay, thank you very much. And I guess a while longer than enables Nigel to launch into his second presentation. Over to you, Nigel Hibson.
Okay, well, I mean, and I know colleagues will have other things to do, and it's getting late in certain parts, but it's quite late here. But I'll be very brief, because these slides which I'm showing you, I think there's a lot of information in them that's on the ICANN site. As you know, a consultation has taken place and inputs have been given in terms of the IANA issues. So I'll be very brief, because a lot of this is on the website. But I just wanted to give you a bit of a flavor for it. So the U.S. government, announcement, I think you're aware of. Essentially, it took place before Net Mondial. It took place before the ICANN meeting in Singapore. And essentially, ICANN, you know, were asked to act as a convener to carry out a dialogue on how the U.S. Role in the IANA process would be replaced. So effectively, how the stewardship of the U.S. Would be taken forward. So that's the essence of it. Why now? Well, you know, there's lots of people have different views on this, and I'm not pretending that any particular view is exactly right. But essentially, the U.S. government did envisage a role, its role as transitional. Indeed, that's this slide is slightly wrong in the sense that, in fact, when ICANN was set up, and many of you will, of course, have a greater sense of history than I do, when ICANN was set up initially, the U.S. were not in the were not in the feedback role. The U.S. didn't have this this function, but then after some dialogue, it was decided that they should have, and they have done ever since. But they always said that it would be something that should be transitioned to the international sort of multi-stakeholder community. So that is that's something that is consistent. And I think, you know, from a large extent, politics have played a significant role in this, of course, as well. And we needn't go into that. So the transition proposals guiding principles. The U.S. have laid down some criteria, as many of you will know. So, I mean, ICANN is consulting. ICANN is having this dialogue. But at the same time, the U.S. has, if you like, said, go away, ICANN, and come back to us with a proposal. But that proposal must be shaped in the following way. It must be round, it must be red, it must be pointed, it must be whatever. You know, they haven't given ICANN a free hand to come back with any sort of proposal, which is quite fortunate, really, I suppose. And so the proposal has to support the multi-stakeholder model. It must maintain the security and stability of the DNS, of course, and the openness of the Internet. And they've specifically said that they will not accept a solution that replaces the NTIA role with a government-led or an intergovernmental organization solution. Now, that's important, because essentially what's that saying is that in that feedback loop, which the NTIA are in at the moment, no one or the U.S. government is saying it wouldn't be acceptable for ICANN to come up with a solution that put another country in that feedback loop. I'm not suggesting ICANN or the community would suggest such a thing, but the U.S. are saying they don't want an individual country or a group of countries to be in that feedback loop, and they certainly don't want an international governmental organization solution. So they don't want the UN or the ITU or some other sort of IGO organization. So I think that's fairly important. It doesn't stop governments having a role in that solution, but not a leading role as such. So what are the IANA functions? Well, I think many of you will, of course, know this. It's not just It's not just the top level domains. It's not just the root zone management. It's also the allocation of internet numbers in cooperation with the RARs, protocol parameter registries on behalf of the IETF as well as coordination of the root zone management. So a number of different functions, but clearly a significant function is the updating of the root zone file that goes on the DNS root zone, which is the if you like the politically sensitive element of it. So those are the functions at a glance. I don't think we have really time to go through them. And as I say, this is on the website. So development since the announcement. So the announcement was made, as I said, just before the ICANN 49 meeting in Singapore. There, at that meeting, there was various dialogue took place, and the internet, the wider internet community, was invited to provide their input via a mailing list. That led to on the 8th of April, ICANN posted the scoping document and issued a call for public input, as many of you will know. And the proposal that ICANN set out, on which they invited public input, was a draft proposal which included a set of principles, a creation of a steering group, and the process to develop a proposal. And that that scoping document has been subject to a lot of discussion on amongst the ICANN community and outside of the ICANN community, because of course what's very important in this is that ICANN were asked to, if you like, consult the global internet community. Now we can all debate what the global internet community is, but it's certainly wider than ICANN. So ICANN's job in this dialogue is beyond ICANN. It includes the IGF, so there'll be a discussion at the IGF. It includes discussions in other international fora as well. We're having a discussion at the World Summit on the Information Society, ITU, hosted event in June. We'll have a discussion on IANA as well. So it's beyond, if you like, the ICANN community. I mean, obviously, ICANN community is very important in that role. So what's in scope? Defining accountability mechanisms that would serve to replace the USG role, as I've said. And what's out of scope is policy development related to the IANA function and the IANA function operator. So, and this is where some of the debate has really taken place, what's in scope and what's out of scope. So what's very clear in terms of the scope that IANA set out in the consultation document, and this was supported by the US government in discussions in Net Mondial and other places, is the process that's being determined is what should replace the USG, the US government, the NTIA, in the feedback loop. It's not saying what... It doesn't include the staff. It doesn't include the function of IANA within ICANN, if you like. The IANA function within ICANN is the function, if you like, that sends the message to the computer to update the root zone file. And as that message is going towards the computer, the NTIA have a role in looking at that message. So it's the NTIA function in that communication path that's being, if you like, replaced or being affected. It's not the sender of the message. It's not the IANA function itself that's in scope. So that's the scope that was set up, and sorry, the scope that was consulted on. A steering group was suggested, and as you know, that's been subject to some consultation as well and some comment. This was the proposed steering group made up of the so-called affected parties, the IETF, ISOC, the NROs, of course, and the various constituency parts of ICANN. And also laid out in the consultation was opportunities for participation, lots of different conferences going on, as I say, both within ICANN, within the ICANN community, the various technical conferences that go on, and the ICANN meetings itself, but also outside of ICANN, as I said, including the IGF, etc. So what happens next? The community has been providing its feedback, and that process finished on May the 8th, as you know, and work is now carrying on, and I understand that you know, a team is being set up to look at all the responses. There's been a lot of responses, and on the basis of that, in the next couple of weeks, as I understand, there'll be some sort of document that is brought forward that will outline what the next steps will be. So I think I'll finish there. As I said, there's quite a lot of information on the ICANN site, and also and perhaps Olivier might be able to say something more about this, is that there is a special webinar taking place, I think, tomorrow, that Teresa Swinehart, who is leading this process for the for ICANN, is conducting. She's conducting a webinar tomorrow on both this and the accountability consultation. So I'll finish there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Nigel. And if I could ask staff to send in, to put details of that webinar on the chat. Of course, it's open for everyone to participate in, and especially if you are interested in this. The webinar is not only on this, but also on ICANN's accountability and transparency, and also the globalization of ICANN. Well, these are all issues that have to be all performed in parallel at the moment, and there's a lot of pressure for it to be done quickly. So thank you for this presentation, Nigel. I was going to mention two more things before opening the floor for questions. First, there is a statement. The ALAC has written two statements, in fact, regarding the transition of stewardship. The first statement was one which was drafted during the last ICANN meeting in Singapore, and that effectively is welcoming the announcement by the National Telecommunications and Information Authority, the NTIA. The second statement is one statement that the ALAC is currently voting on. There is a draft final version. The statement has already been sent to the process since the process closed on the 8th of May, but the ratification is currently taking place, and so a follow-up message will be sent with the ratification. And Ariel has very kindly put the link in the chat for the second statement, so thank you. And that effectively is supporting the proposal for the creation of a steering group on the condition that the creation of such a steering group should not jeopardize or otherwise hinder the creation of a community-led ICANN cross-community working group on the same topic. And there is a cross-community working group on the same topic that is going to be created about this. So the I don't know if Tijani is back. I'm sorry, Tijani. I'm kind of assuming
that I am
chairing in your absence. So I hand the floor over back to you. I'm told in your absence that we have until half past. We have an additional 30 minutes of interpretation time. So there's plenty of time for questions if people have questions. Back to you, Tijani. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Thank you, Nigel. And I really apologize for this technical problem I had here. And now I am online. If there is any question to Olivier or Nigel, please go ahead. I don't see any hand. Oh, I see now Olivier. Yes, Olivier, please.
Thank you very much, Tijani. It's Olivia speaking. I had a question for Nigel. looking at and it's going to be a tough one because that's been going around my head for a little while. If we backtrack on this presentation, over to the question as it was brought forward by the U.S. government here, defining, so what's in scope, defining the accountability mechanisms that would serve to replace the U.S. government's role to ensure ICANN's performance of the IANA functions based on the agreements and or policies provided by the respective bodies. And in there it mentions the current bodies that are directly involved with the IANA function. I wonder how this has to be read, whether this is read as these are the only bodies that will assume a role in the future accountability mechanisms, or is this just basically saying, no, we need to define accountability mechanisms which are absolutely open to make sure that is able to oversee the activities of those respective bodies. I'm not quite sure how I understand this scope.
Well, I a very good question, and I won't suggest I'm an expert, but the way I've read that and the way that I've heard other people talk about that is that you know, the last part of that paragraph is effectively saying that the accountability mechanism that has to be defined has to be based on the agreements or policies provided by the respective bodies. So what that's saying is that whatever comes up, whatever replaces the NTIA has to be able to take account of the roles and responsibilities of those bodies. But it doesn't, that doesn't have to be the be end and end all. In other words, you know, ICANN in its dialogue with the global internet community could, you know, the global internet community could say, oh, we've got a great solution here. You know, the solution is that, you know, there's this little organization in Scunthorpe or this little organization in Versailles or in Prague or wherever that could do this function. It's a multi-stakeholder organization and it would be an ideal body to do this. So, you know, obviously that's not going to happen, but In other words, the solution, the mechanism that is alighted upon in the end, obviously doesn't have to be within the ICANN community. It could be it could be made up of a number of people from outside the ICANN community or whatever. So the mechanism is a multi-stakeholder mechanism, but of course could be made up of people you know, in various places. So I think that's the answer, really.
Thank you, Nigel. Yes, Sebastian, please. Sebastian? You might be muted. Star 7 to unmute. Sebastian, you are still here? I don't hear you.
It's an Adobe problem, Tijani. Sebastian's put in the chat, he seems to have a problem with Adobe. I must say there has been some very poor performance from the recent versions of the Adobe Connect recently. I don't know why, but it's bizarre.
Okay, so waiting for Sebastian. Yeah. I'd like to make a small, it's not a comment, but it's more or less also a question for the two presenters. In Net Mondial, among others, there was two important points, two important concerns that remained in my mind. The first one is the net neutrality. And I remember that the private sector was against the net neutrality, and they said there is not consensus about it. The second point was about enhanced cooperation, the famous, the very known enhanced cooperation. It, there was in the Tunis agenda a paragraph about enhanced cooperation, and some governments still repeat the same, exactly the same word since years now. They are always speaking about the role of governments on equal footing in the internet governance. And I thought that with the decision of the U.S. government, this problem would be, I would not say solved, but at least there is no more big concern about that, because now there will be an equal footing really for all governments and all stakeholders about the internet governance. But unfortunately, I see that the same people say the same things. So I have a concern about this point, because as you all know, governments still have this, how to say, this opposition. I think that now it is not because of the equal footing between governments, it is more about multi-stakeholder. This is the problem. So I don't know what you think about that. I have now two Sebastian, so if some one of them is able to speak, yes? Sebastian? Sebastian? No. So, Olivier or Nigel, till we have Sebastian ready.
Sorry, well, this is Nigel. I'm not sure what Sebastian has asked, because I haven't seen it. But just to Jani, just in answer to your what you said about enhanced cooperation, I mean, you're absolutely right. Clearly, the criticism, if you like, before the U.S. announcement was that that governments were not on an equal footing, because the U.S. had had this role that other governments did not have, and therefore the U.S. announcement or what might happen in the future should take that argument away. But as we saw in the working group on enhanced cooperation a couple of weeks ago at the UN, southern governments were still saying, well, effectively there's still not equal footing because the U.S. Has the dominance, if you like, of the industry in the U.S. They have dominance because they are the ones that have a locus on the affirmation of commitments, although, you know, that might also change in the future. So, you know, it is difficult to, you know, some governments would still argue that that they don't have an equal role in this in this process.
Okay, thank you. Sebastian, you still want to speak? Otherwise, Olivier, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Tijani. It's Olivier Capanablon speaking. So I put my hand up because there was a question in the chat from Eduardo Mendez, and the question has translated by at-large staff, so my thank very much. Is why is it a prerequisite that NTIA, being a government organization, ask that no other governmental organization assume the control of IANA? It's true that there was a specific point in there. It was not supposed to be taken over by a government or an intergovernmental organization. And I think, and this is my own interpretation of this, and perhaps Nigel has a different interpretation, but my interpretation was that the U.S. government did not want this function to be... Hello?
Someone has...
Okay, we had a bad echo.
Okay, go ahead.
The U.S. government did not want the whole function
to fall in the hands of a government as such that would not be running things in a multi-stakeholder way. So what I think what they mean by that, it doesn't say, and it's written nowhere, that no government should have a say in the system that will be put together. But what it does say is that it should not be a government that will take over that function. So there's a slight difference between the two. It basically is saying, in other words, that there should be a multi-stakeholder system to oversee that function, and it should just not be just governments. Governments in general have the tradition of operating not in a multi-stakeholder way, but in a multilateral way, i.e. Governments with governments, civil society with civil society, private sector with private sector, but the last word is always with the government. And I think that's what the U.S. government wanted to avoid. And Nigel, you might have more of a better explanation than me, but that's what I understood.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Olivier. I mean, I think the U.S. government, you know, believed that, as many of us have thought in the past, that, you know, replacing themselves in the feedback loop by another government or an intergovernmental process would not be appropriate. And I think many people, you know, think the same way. And so that, you know, that is one of the conditions that we're working with.
Thank you, Nigel. Sebastian now. Sebastian? Why we don't him, Sebastian? If he's on the Adobe, there is a problem. It's clear. So please make Adobe, make Adigo call him. In the meantime, is there any other? Yes, Sebastian, your system don't work, but if you are called by Adigo, it will work. So, any other question? We have still 5 minutes. So, if everything is clear, I will thank our those, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc and Nigel Nixon. Thank you very much. And thank you all for attending, for participating. Please don't forget to fill in the evaluation sheet. It will help us to arrange and to correct what is not working well. So please fill it in and send it back to the staff. Thank you very much. So thank you all, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening for everyone. Bye-bye.
And thanks to the interpreters for staying another 30 minutes.
It will be nice.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks for putting up with us.
Thank yes, you. Thank yes, you thanks. Thank you.
Gracias, Muti.
Thank you, interpreters, and thank you, our staff, our wonderful staff. Goodbye.
Thank you everyone for joining today's webinar. The meeting has been adjourned. Please disconnect all remaining audio lines at this time.
Thank you, Thierry.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening.